Have you subscribed to the OTB Football Podcast?
And in fact, the bloke who man-marked Graham's your neck got a broken jaw. Ross Graham, shouldn't laugh.
Subscribe now to the OTB Football Podcast, stream wherever you get your podcasts, and download the OTB Sports app.
The OTB Podcast Network with Get Set Go. Car insurance is boring, but saving money bounces it into brilliance. Enter promo code SPORT and save €40 off your car insurance with GetSetGo.ie.
The News Round on Off The Ball.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
This is News Talk.
Hello there, you're very welcome along. So Eddie Brennan with us this hour to chat hurling. A lot of issues in hurling, it seems, over the course of the league campaign thus far. The Slitter is travelling too far, the art of defending in decline, too many frees. We'll get his thoughts on these issues being discussed over the past couple of weeks. So Eddie Brennan on the way this hour. Eric Donovan at 8 o'clock. We have seven Irish boxers now going to Tokyo. A pretty impressive tally. The all-time record is 8. So seven are going to Tokyo. We'll also get his thoughts on Mayweather, Logan Paul. I'm not too sure if many of you forked out the $49.99 US dollars for that fight. There was booing at the end of it. It was that bad. And of course, Hungary versus the Republic of Ireland has just kicked off. 2-3 minutes into that game, we'll be chatting at full time, which falls nicely on the football show, and keep you updated throughout. 53106, the text number. At Off The Ball on Twitter is where you will get us. We have Richie McCormack along for the ride. Hello.
Joe, how are you?
Very well. And Will O'Callaghan, how are you, Will?
Evening, Joe. Evening, Rich.
So, fellas, we're 3 minutes into the game, obviously. Packed house. I mean, not just like socially distant packed house. I mean, the good old days. Everybody rammed in there into the stadium. I'm not sure what the COVID situation is in Hungary or the vaccination situation is, but certainly the attending of sports events is pretty much back to normal, it would seem. The Irish team, just for anyone tuning in, it's Bazuno in goal. They've gone with a 3-5-2 in effect. So the back three for Ireland, Duffy comes into the side, John Egan captains the country for the third time, and Dara O'Shea is in as well. It's Matt Doherty as right wing back, it's James McLean as left wing back, and then we're anticipating the three in midfield is Cullen and Hourihan, with Jason Knight a bit further forward, so like a three with Knight at the front of it, and then Parrott and Ida as the two up front. Obviously just keeping an eye on this game now as it settles down, and we'll get a look at the formation. Also, Rich, the taking of the knee, I don't know if you missed it there, if you had the volume up. Yeah, roundly booed. I mean, I know, as was the case at the Riverside over the last couple of England matches, was there a healthy applause in opposition to the booing? It was just full on booing. That was quite impressive. One of the Hungary players, when he heard the booing, pointed to the sleeve of his top, which has the UEFA logo that says respect. Yeah. I mean, look, this is Hungary. We know what's going to happen at England games. I think this is going to become a real slightly nasty point of contention across the Euros. Unfortunately, it's not going anywhere.
Well, much like the UK, Hungary has unfortunately lurched towards the far right in the past few years. I guess that can be evidenced by their Prime Minister, Viktor Orban. I mean, you mentioned they're going back to the good old days in terms of how they're crowded into the arena there in Budapest. They're going back to the good old days as they see it in terms of their evolution as a people. Their lurch there to the right wing has been pretty disgraceful over the past couple of years. And this is kind of, I guess, a symptom of it when you see the widespread booing. It wasn't just, as you mentioned, a smattering of boos. It was widespread booing from the Hungarian fans there in Budapest for the entire Ireland team that took the knee. We only saw the pictures of their captain, Shelley, who was, as you mentioned there, pointing to the respect logo from UEFA on his sleeve, but declining to take a knee. But it is like it's a worrying thing that we're going to see across the Euros in different cities, and there are different places that are, you know, more right wing than others. Hungary is one, the UK is another, unfortunately. And we've seen Ireland go close early in the first half as well, which is an encouraging start from Ireland there, at least.
A brilliant free kick, you'd have to say. Stephen Kenny was talking about De Bruyne crossing in the build up to this game. Well, this was kind of in that area where the free kick was, and it was whipped in from the right hand side, outswinging cross, and John Egan got a great header on it and hit the crossbar. Brilliant header, loads of power in the header. So that's a bit of encouragement for Ireland, who are currently keeping the ball and have started okay. Hungary are a good team, we should say as well. Well, whatever about the booing of the knee and all that business, when it comes to the actual matters on the pitch, they qualified in some style. They'll be going to the Euros hoping to cause some problems for teams. So very decent opposition for Ireland tonight, and this is closer to Hungary's best 11 than we saw against Cyprus at the weekend on their behalf.
Yeah, this is the final step for them. Their campaign kicks off in 6 days' time. They've got two of their games in Budapest in their group and a fairly favourable group where they could potentially qualify as well. So they'll be hoping that this is a tune-up for them. The Ireland team was kind of a bit surprised that Manning didn't come in for McLean at left-back, and was a little bit surprised that Darrell Horgan didn't get a chance to start with the way he played against Andorra. He was one of the better players coming off the bench. But you know, Stephen Kenny has gone back to that system, which I think he prefers, which is, where possible, getting three central defenders there. We see that now, at this stage, Darragh O'Shea has become a focal point for his defence. John Egan is back in.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure Enda Stevens will become that left back when he's fit again. And I think there's a little bit of pressure coming on Matt Doherty as well, because the two fullbacks were a bit of an issue in Andorra, where McLean and Doherty really didn't get forward all that often. Now, I know the midfield two on that night sat very deep, which didn't help in the first half when Andorra put a bit of a press on Ireland. But you would be hoping that Doherty and McLean can pop up in more attacking positions this evening, because if not, it's going to be difficult to build on this fairly decent start that we've made in these 5 minutes or so far. But I think we're all excited to see how the Canary and the Parrot are going to link up front, with Adam Ida now playing in front of Parrot. It looks like Parrot's playing more in a number 10 role so far, and then Jason Knight will be asked to get up and support as well. So we've been looking for a transition, Joe, for a while. We've been looking for young players to get a chance, and that's what Stephen Kenny has done over the last three or four fixtures.
Yeah, I saw Dan McDonald tweet, and it does just remind you of what he's trying to do at the moment in terms of the youth that he's bringing through, and obviously the change in approach on the field as well. He said it's just 3 years since Jason Knight, Troy Parrott, Adam Ida were playing together for the Irish under-17s team at the European Championships. It's worth all of us probably bearing that in mind. He is trying to bring effectively a whole new generation through here. So tonight's a really interesting test for them, given where the team is. Bit of confidence maybe from the win, albeit the performance wasn't brilliant against Andorra and in front of a hostile crowd. So tonight's a really interesting night. We'll obviously keep a close eye on it and then talk about it in depth at full time. Just before we get into Rich's news round, Will, on the booing thing. Look, as Rich rightly says, in different countries, they're coming at it from different perspectives. We're probably looking more at the UK English angle at the moment. I mean, I think the theory that it's all a bid to spread Marxism has been given the short shrift it deserves. And yes, there has been a link up with Black Lives Matter, but really, fundamentally, what the players are doing is a very simple gesture. It's just anti-racism. It's nothing more than that. It came on the back of George Floyd's death. It was a very organic thing and heartfelt thing, and that is all it's about. And so I think Ian Wright said the fans claiming it was about Marxism and their objections to Black Lives Matter, they're just being disingenuous, which frankly they are. And then I think there's another cohort who just PC gone mad. This is the woke elite telling me what to do. I'm not, you know, it's an anti-establishment protest.
Same people.
Possibly so, yeah.
And there'll be a crossover, yeah.
And regardless, even if you're somebody who feels, look, cancel culture's gone too far, the woke elite have gone too far, you know, being told what to do is all out there. It's just amazing they can't listen to Southgate, listen to the players, listen to Sterling, listen to Rashford, and just accept that it's just a gesture against racism. And even if they are still of the opinion, PC gone mad, I just hate the way the world is going. Just stand there silently. Don't boo it. Don't boo it is the point. Like, stand there and bemoan it with your mates on the way home and say, I think this is all a bit nonsensey, and half the players out there are just doing it without giving it any real thought. It doesn't sit well with me. I get all that. Have a moan about that on the way home. Don't boo players from your own country saying, we think there is a problem with racism and this is a 10-second gesture, which again grew up organically. Like, it happened for very good, natural, understandable reasons on the back of the Floyd death. So it's demoralizing, actually. And I want to say it's surprising. It's not shocking, but it's still actually a little bit surprising. They're booing their own players that they're then cheering literally 30 seconds later.
Well, look, I'm sure there's probably going to be some listeners who claim the three of us are worshipping at the altar of wokeness currently. But, like, if you consider England is the particularly interesting one, because we can kind of half expect that in games played in Budapest and St. Petersburg and a few other venues where there's previously been issues, there is more than likely going to be booing of knees being taken by teams. But England is the particularly interesting one when you consider the history of what's happened to English players of colour playing away from home in recent seasons. Like, it's not that long ago that we saw, you know, Sofia, where the Bulgarian fans were chanting monkey noises at Raheem Sterling. I think it was Tyrone Mings as well, who was booed at various stages during the game. They had a friendly not that long ago against Spain, where there was racist chants in the stands in Seville. So it's not like this was 20 years ago, 30 years ago, that English players of colour were being abused from the stands in games where England were playing. And I am sure, like, Gareth Southgate was really annoyed, and I thought he spoke really well after the game in Middlesbrough last week. But particularly for your players to have to endure that abroad, it must have been very difficult to go back and for that to happen in a stadium in your own country. Yeah. Like, whatever about the wokeness of it, I don't believe for a moment that the vast majority of fans care about Marxism or how Black Lives Matter is aligned politically. Particularly, do you think any of those fans in Budapest tonight, lads, care about Marxism or culture Marxism when they're deciding to boo people taking a knee?
Well, no, Barry Rene from the... Go ahead, Joe.
I was just a brief point. I was just going to say, if I had to guess what it is, I don't think it's on certain people's behalf. I don't think it's like outright racism in their own heads. I think it's like this anti-establishment, we're being told what to do, PC gone world. Yeah, the woke stuff, all of that. I think it's like, oh, sod this. You're not bringing this onto a football pitch as well. I think that's what it is for a lot of them. And of course, there's bound to be just a couple of racists who are like, this is pretty fun as well. We get to boo black players with impunity. Mm.
Well, that's essentially the point that Bernie Rene made on Twitter today, is these people have found another way to boo black players. And Will mentioned there, and us discussing the racist abuse suffered by England players at the hands of their own fans isn't going to achieve much, let's be honest. But we're going back to a day, not when England players were booed on away grounds in Eastern Europe and elsewhere. We're going back to the days when John Barnes was routinely booed at Wembley for a seeming lack of effort. And that seeming lack of effort was purely born of his skin colour. Like, him along with Paul Gascoigne were probably the two most gifted players of their generation, and Barnes was the one who routinely got booed just because he was black. We're back there now.
Yeah, how they resolve this is going to be difficult. I mean, I'm sure there'll be some behind the scenes saying, oh, well, look, new season, let's just let this drift out to sea a little bit because it's proving so contentious. And there will be others who say, absolutely not, it's now more important than ever. We can't let the people booing it win. And I can see merit in both arguments over the summer. So let's see how the Euros go. We're not going to solve it here. This is the news round, ultimately. We just got into that because if you're tuning in at the match between Ireland and Hungary, the taking of the knee, roundly booed, massively booed by the home support there. That was how we got into it. If you are just joining us, still nil all after 13 minutes. Pretty even so far. Hungary maybe just shading possession, but definitely not by much. So a decent start by Ireland. John Egan hit the crossbar with a header from a free. News round is with thanks to Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette made of what matters. So, Richie, the boxers, Kelly Harrington.
Yeah, I'm relying on you stream-wise, by the way, Joe, because my Sky Go stream is about a minute and a half behind you're getting the TV in front. So
that's all right.
I'll know by your reactions if we've scored or Hungary have scored over the course of the next 10 minutes or so. But as you mentioned, Kelly Harrington warmed up for this summer's Olympic Games by claiming lightweight gold in the qualifier tournament in Paris today. The Dubliner beat Britain's Caroline Dubois via split decision in their final. Harrington's win will, of course, boost her seeding in Tokyo. Meanwhile, Michaela Walsh had to settle for silver in the featherweight division after she lost by unanimous decision to Irma Testa of Italy. Walsh, of course, had already secured Olympic qualification over the weekend along with six others.
Yeah, it's really impressive. I think nine went and five qualified, so that's a very good return. Eric Donovan, brilliant on all things boxing, is going to join us after 8 o'clock. The most Ireland had ever qualified was Rio with eight, and obviously Michael O'Reilly didn't fight after his failed drugs test, so seven fought. So to get seven to Tokyo, I mean, it's still really impressive. I think we all worried that after Billy Walsh departed, would things fall off a cliff? Clearly they haven't, Will. The tradition remains strong. The talent is coming through. I mean, kind of a cool thing to think of Aoife O'Rourke as a 14-year-old watching Katie Taylor in 2012. So you can probably draw a line from Katie to all these other fighters coming through now.
Yeah, look, it's a remarkable return on investment as well. Like, I think Kelly Harrington was the person on the highest sport grant going into this, given that she was the 2018 world champion. So she was heavily backed on that cycle because the feeling was that she would win a medal had the games taken place at Tokyo last year. She's now going to her maiden games. She's still only on, I think it's a 40 grand grant. The vast majority of the boxers who've qualified are somewhere between 12 and 20,000 in direct funding. And that just goes to show they're punching well above their weight, to use a pun there. And I think we would have had a team of eight great if Michael Nevin had gone to the qualifiers, but he made the decision just a couple of weeks ago that he wasn't going to go. But given how he did at the Europeans in the middleweight class, I think he would have had a really good chance of qualifying too. So the one thing is, will our conversion rate be better than Rio? Because if we were having this conversation in 2016 on the news round, our feeling would have been that there was almost guaranteed medals there, that Joe Ward was definitely going to get a medal. There was no doubt that Katie Taylor was going to be back on the podium again, and it didn't happen. It was very disappointing after all the qualifiers that we had. So it'll be intriguing to see how many will turn them into medals, and also whether Bernard Dunn will still be around as high performance coach by the end of the Olympics, because plenty of rumours circling that the Games may well be the end of his contract.
Okay.
Still, the circumstances regarding Rio, the circumstances regarding Rio this time around, as regards qualifying, obviously are pretty different. But as regards where boxers are on their routes to these Tokyo Games, are completely different. A lot of the boxers went to Rio and obviously was there pretty undercooked. Paddy Barnes being a case in point, Katie as well, wasn't in her best moment in terms of boxing. So the thing is, we're going with a lot of momentum this time around, whereas we didn't have it 5 years ago going to Rio.
Yeah. No, for sure. Eric Donovan on the way late. He definitely thinks the three female boxers are all of great, great chances of getting a medal, which is encouraging. So still nil all in Hungary. Hungary nil, Ireland nil, 17 minutes on the clock. Now, geez, this next story, just so random, bizarre, but I mean, when you're...
Could have been so awful.
Close proximity to petrol and fire pit and something goes wrong, it can go wrong really quickly. So it seems they're all okay-ish.
Yep, seemingly. Damien Dale Ende saying that both he and Orji Snyman should be fit in time for South Africa's series against the Lions this summer. They were among four Munster players involved in a fire pit accident over the weekend, with the South African duo suffering significant burns, they call them, to their hands. Dale Ende has told South African media that one of the group poured petrol on the fire, which resulted in a petrol can exploding. CJ Stander and Mike Haley were also treated for superficial burns in that incident.
Yeah, okay, well, listen, good. It wasn't more serious. Not a fun weekend for the lads, to say the least. So, Padraig Carrington just missed out on US Open.
Yeah, by a single stroke. He won't be playing at Torrey Pines. The European Ryder Cup captain missed out by a single stroke at the qualifying event in California. Former US Open runner-up Ricky Fowler also missed the cut, and former Masters champ Charles Schwartzel among those who did seal qualification today for Torrey Pines, which gets underway, you know what, just under 4 hours time.
Still nil all, 18 minutes gone, Hungary against Ireland. Now we're starting to see a few events with fans being brought back, including Dalymount.
Yeah, they're trickling back in. Fans, Bohemians say they intend to have 100 fans inside Dalymount for their next home game. Earlier today, Bo's next opponents, Derry City, confirmed a limited number of supporters will attend Friday's game, Friday's meeting of the sides at the Ryan McBride Brandywell, while the Dublin club want to welcome 100 fans back for their June 18th game with Drogheda United. We already know that there will be fans, 1,000 of them, inside Tala Stadium on Friday for Shamrock Rovers meeting with Finn Harps, and also 600 inside Turner's Cross for their game in the First Division, Cork City's that is, with Cavan Teeley.
Yeah, it's great. Leo Varadkar talking today about people back in offices by August. People I know who I consider the same age-ish getting their vaccines. It's all happening, Will.
It really is, yeah. And I would imagine it's going to be goldest to try and get tickets for Mount Juliet next month now as well, because confirmed in the last hour or so that Rory McIlroy will be going back to the Irish Open for the first time since Ballyliffin in 2018 when he missed the cut. So he's confirmed he's going to be teeing it up between July the 1st and the 4th, along with fellow former major winners in Padraig Carrington, Graham McDowell and Shane Lowry. So I think the tickets portal went live this evening as well, right, and good luck getting your hands on them.
5,000 tickets, I think, which is a decent number. I guess no reason not to in the open air. And I mean, for McIlroy to travel back, it's great. If you have McIlroy, you have a tournament, basically, in global golfing terms. It means Golf Channel, all these various outlets will cover it. So great to have him back. And geez, I mean, any chance you get to watch Rory McIlroy play in person, if you like your golf, you should take. So French Open, I'm at the point where I'm about to dive into the French Open. There's too much sport to watch, but I feel like it's heating up nicely.
Yeah, it's actually been a really good tournament so far. I've enjoyed it and watched a lot of it there yesterday in particular. Six seed Alexander Zverev needed just 96 minutes this evening to book a French Open semi-final spot. The German beat Alejandro Davidovich Fokina 6-4, 6-1, 6-1. And Zverev will face the winner of tonight's quarterfinal, with the second seed Daniel Medvedev going up against fifth seed Stefanos Tsitsipas. Earlier, a pair of marathon three-setters produced a pair of Grand Slam semi-final debutants. Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova took the deciding set of her quarterfinal with Elena Rybakina 9-7. The Russian will play Tamara Zidanshek in the semi-finals after the Slovenian, ranked 85 in the world, prevailed 8-6 in the third set of her quarter-final with Spain's Paula Badosa.
Still in all, 20 minutes gone in Hungary. Hungary 0, Republic of Ireland 0. Troy Parrott with a nice little nutmeg on a Hungary player then, who said, "How dare you," and swiped his legs from under him. So Ireland with a free and they're in possession now. I can relate to the Hungary player. I mean, frankly, how dare he? Meanwhile, I suspect, Rishi, a cohort of United fans, part of their interest in the Netherlands was to see... I'm right, haven't I? Danny van de Beek was a good player at one stage.
Was once.
I mean, geez, he... You kind of feel sorry for him. He needed this tournament probably maybe to just get some momentum again, but he's out totally.
Momentum and possibly a shop window as well, but he's been ruled out of the Netherlands squad for Euro 2020. The Manchester United midfielder misses out through injury. Interestingly, head coach Frank de Boer has declined calling up a replacement. He's going to go with a 25-man squad, saying he didn't want to make such a late addition to his panel. The Dutch opened their Group C campaign against the Ukraine in Amsterdam on Sunday. Meanwhile, Atalanta's Matteo Pessina has been drafted into the Italy squad after Inter midfielder Stefano Sensi withdrew with a groin injury. Spain head coach Luis Enrique has drafted five more players to train with the squad. It's after Sergio Busquets tested positive for COVID-19. Raul Albiol, Rodrigo Moreno, Pablo Fornals, Carlos Soler and Bryce Mendes will link up with the 24-man squad. Sweden midfielder Matthias Svanberg has also tested positive for coronavirus today.
So this Premier League golf business, this is genuinely happening, is that right?
They wanted to, and their website has definitely been flushed out over the course of the last while. Premier Golf League organisers say their venture is not all about money. They've penned an open letter vowing to hand over 50% ownership of the group to the golf community. The PGL say they want to engage the PGA and European tours in discussions and make their events appointment viewing in the same way that the Ryder Cup and the existing majors are. An 18-event tour is proposed, and despite them not being all about the money, they're proposing a fund in terms of prize money of close to 200 million euro.
Okay, it's all out war. Don't really know how it's going to end up, actually. It's hard to know. The big golfing story at the moment is Brooks v. Bryson, which is just going to unparalleled levels now of ridiculousness, where Brooks Koepka, not playing at the current event, was encouraging fans every time Bryson hit a shot to say, "Way to go, Brooks." And they were then being asked, Bryson was then asking for those fans to be turfed out of the tournament. In which case, Brooks was giving them 50 cases of beer for the first 50 fans thrown out. And Bryson has now had sit-down discussions with the PGA about Brooks's behaviour. Which is, I mean, it's beginning to cross a line, Will, I would think.
Yeah, look, it's comical up to the point when it starts to seriously affect something like, say, the US Open in a few weeks' time. Like, I would like to see the two of them going head-to-head. I would love if they were drawn to play in the same group and we got a frosty relationship between both of them in the same three-ball, or if they had to play together at the weekend. But it's kind of crap, like getting the fans, who are already annoying enough on the PGA Tour anyway, when you have to listen to mashed potato and when you're getting to this kind of crap going on. I don't think that's necessarily going to entice other golf fans to enjoy it. And as much as you were just saying about the Premier Golf League, I don't know how many of the top players are really going to be enticed to play in it, because, you know, pretty much all of the world's top 10 ruled out categorically playing in it when it was being floated about a year and a half ago. And since then, there hasn't really been an impression that they've actually managed to land a top player. You can put $250 million up for grabs at the 18 tournaments, but if you don't have a field, and particularly if you're not able to draw away some of the best players to play in a breakaway league, there is no way that they're going to play that. The one thing I would say about the Premier Golf League, better website than we got for the European Super League. Not hard to do so, but it was at least looked professional. I saw Richie put the story up on otbsports.com earlier, so I had a quick flick on to Premier Golf League, and actually it looks in decent shape. So at least they got a decent PR company to look after that.
Okay, fellas, we are out of time. Thanks so much, Will O'Callaghan and Richard McCormack. Cheers, fellas.
Cheers, lads.
25 minutes gone, Hungary 0, Ireland 0. We are talking to Eddie Brennan next.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
The OTB Podcast Network with Get Set Go. Car insurance is boring, but saving money bounces it into brilliance. Enter promo code SPORT and save €40 off your car insurance with GetSetGo.ie.